Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Welcome back to 720 WGN. This is Nightside. My name is Eric Rung. I am with Mark Carmen. And we have two very special guests that are joining us here in the 9 o'clock hour. Brian Wallach and Sandra Apravaya. Thank you so much for joining us. And so you guys are here to talk about a very important program that you guys launched on Tuesday. It's called IAM-ALS. Tell us about it.
So IAM-ALS is, in a nutshell, an effort to raise awareness about the disease ALS. And to step back, the reason why we got into this effort is about a year and a half ago, I was actually diagnosed with ALS. For many people, they think of ALS as a disease that only affects people above 55. In reality, it actually affects every age, gender, demographic out there. And so we stepped back after my diagnosis and tried to figure out how we could actually help this fight, because it's been, I think this year is actually the 80th anniversary of Lou Gehrig's speech, mm-hmm. where he declared himself the luckiest man in the world, and there's still not a cure for ALS. And so we tried to figure out how can we actually take the resources, the network that we have, the time that we have, to help bring about a cure as fast as possible. And the culmination of all that planning over the last year was IAM-ALS.
So, I'm sorry, Eric, but I read your story in the Tribune, this week. My fiance said, you got to see this. And then Eric and I were doing the show tonight, and I was like, we should try to see if they would be willing to come in studio. And so we're really super, super grateful that you are willing to be here. And it's I know it's obviously an extremely tender space. So I'm just curious, how are you feeling a year and a half in? I mean, life expectancy is what, once you were diagnosed, 2 to 5 years. So you're a year and a half in, you're on the radio, you're walking around, you're talking to us. So how are you feeling?
So, I'll let Sandra jump in there. But, you know, for me, I actually am one of the lucky ones. I'm progressing relatively slowly. You can probably hear my voice. There's some impact. So 2 years ago, I was a federal prosecutor in a courtroom giving closing arguments. That would be hard today. So there have been changes, but overall, thankfully, working out multiple times a week, still working full time. Wow. That part of life has been really good to us.
Yeah, I think that's one of the hard things about ALS is you don't know what sort of version or variety of ALS you might have. So when we got diagnosed, doctors couldn't say, like, what is our life expectancy? 10% of individuals do live 10 years or longer, and so we're banking on that. I think eventually, as we understand more about ALS, we'll find out that it's a variety of diseases that is all sort of branded as one.
Yeah. And one of the things that you're trying to do with IAM-ALS here, too, is to raise awareness of exactly what this disease is. Now, you mentioned the network that you guys have, and part of that network is that you guys were part of the engineering force, I guess, behind the fundraising effort for the 2008 Barack Obama's run for president. So how are you using that network in this situation?
So for us, a key question that we asked was, what is missing in the fight against ALS right now? Because there are a lot of terminal illnesses out there that get a lot of attention that compete for people's priorities. And so our question was, how could we most effectively explain to people that ALS is a disease that we can actually cure if we can get more attention to it? And so what we did was kind of go back to the lessons that we learned from that experience back in 2008 and try to figure out how we could build that idea of a movement, that idea of community into the ALS fight. Because as Sandra mentioned, one of the hardest things about the fight is the uncertainty. And so you have to be able to embrace that uncertainty and actually turn that into a positive. Because for many people, they get the diagnosis, and in reality, 50% of people with ALS die within a year of being diagnosed. So they don't have the space to actually be a leader in the fight and in the way that other disease areas do. So our thought was, could we help find a way to actually give them that empowerment, give them that capacity, and at the same time be able to go out to folks outside of the ALS fight and say, hey, look, we know there are many people out there trying to get you to pay attention to them, but if you cure this thing, if you crack this nut, you actually unlock the cure to Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, all these other large disease areas that are coming that we need to find a cure for. And for us, that's a big part of the message is, you know, a rising tide has raised all boats. And so we want to make sure that we can do that for the ALS fight and then bring that as far as we can forward.
I would think it's sort of got to be frustrating that you have to, like, sell this. Like, hey, it's not just about me. Yes, I've been diagnosed. But, like, you know, it's not like you're trying to get someone to buy a car. You're talking about the most important thing and something that everyone is terrified of, that you know, that a loved one of theirs would be, or themselves would be diagnosed with the disease. It's an easy sell but a hard sell at the same time, right?
It is, but you know, I think the perspective that at least I've gained over the last year and a half is that everyone in this life carries a burden with them. And so the reality is that you can't simply say my burden's more important than your burden. What we have to be able to do is actually explain to people that when we come together, we can tackle these challenges. And so here's why this one can be the next one. Because you're right, it can affect anyone. And so if we're able to stop this thing, we actually can change the paradigm of the future in a way that is really impactful.
And Sandra, I just thought it was interesting that you said that when we were diagnosed. Like, it's not, and Brian, I mean, here, you know that, you know, your wife's here supporting, and also that she's probably going to be carrying on your legacy. Like, all that's in front of you, and then it's a we thing. It's not just, I mean, you both are going through this.
Not legacy. Yeah. Yesterday, Brian told me he's going to make a great old man, and I agree with that.
Damn straight.
Damn straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the disease is very difficult. Another thing that Brian and I have come to understand about why the disease is so underfunded, as Brian mentioned, is because it is such a ferocious fight and a bit of a train wreck. Families who come out of it, who are the survivors of other family members, it can be difficult to continue to engage in advocating for a cure. And so we just want to, like, harness all the energy and the network and skills and expertise we have built up in our careers in campaigning, in politics, in government, in nonprofit work, and bring every single force to bear on this disease as fast as possible.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, it is a we that goes through this. It's the patient, it's the family, it's the friends, it's their community. They all suffer that empowerment. They all see the decline, they see the loss. And so that is the real opportunity, though, is that if that group can find a way to plug back into hope, into making hope real, they have the power to really do incredible things.
One of the things that you guys talked about for your goal was $100 million. And tell us how you came to that number. And the other thing that a lot of people think of when they think of ALS is the ice water bucket challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind. That you guys mentioned this in the article as well. And tell us, when you first were diagnosed, you thought about that, and now you're trying to raise another $100 million. That campaign raised more than that. Now you're talking about another $100 million. Where'd you guys get that number?
So the number is a combination of two things. One is we hope to be able to actually increase the amount of federal spending allocated to ALS research. Right now, that number's gone up over the last couple of years, but is way below what other terminal illnesses receive, at a multiplier level of sort of lack of parity. So we hope to be able to actually work with all the other patients, caregivers, advocates out there to raise awareness in D.C. so we can actually see a $50 million increase at minimum in terms of funding for ALS research. The other part of that comes from a large-scale grassroots effort, and that's where we go back to the 2008 idea that it doesn't need to be, you don't need to be a billionaire to actually cure a disease. You just need to be able to give some time, some energy, some investment. And wherever you want to put your time, energy, investment, we want to meet you there, get you engaged, and that when we build a real movement, when people see the real return on what they're actually investing into an effort, that creates the capacity to actually bend the arc of the future.
And while we're talking about it, if people are listening to this at home and they want to get involved, they want to see what this campaign is all about, where do they go?
So the website is live. It's imals.org. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're out there everywhere that you are. And we've been putting out messages over the last couple of days, and we'll start actually getting out there to the community and trying to build towards that number over the coming weeks, months, and years.
Let's take a quick time out. I just want to come back and sort of rewind with you guys as to what the initial conversations were like. And, you know, once you're, okay, this is what's in front of us. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to partner. Let's have that conversation next on 720 WGN. Brian Wallach, Sandra Abrevaya are in studio. Brian has been diagnosed with ALS. They are in the fight together. IamALS.org is the website. And if you want to follow along on Twitter, which you guys think you guys just put out this week, it's IamALS.org as well. You guys are over 5,000 followers. Congratulations on that in a very short period of time. Before we went to the break, I was just kind of rewinding back to, okay, you went to pick up a pen, you felt some weakness, you were coughing, you go to the doctor, you get diagnosed, and now you guys are sitting in a room together digesting this, and I'm just curious, like, what, you know, if you take us back to what that time was like, and then sort of just getting an idea, okay, this is how we're going to proceed and how we're going to live our lives.
I think to rewind us back to that moment and actually take us back to a part of our earlier discussion. You know, I ended up going to the doctor initially because we were in the hospital after our second daughter was born, and the coughing was so bad that Sandra was concerned that I may have some sort of, you know, lung cancer issue, something like that. So we went to see the doctor. He sent me to a neurologist. The first neurologist told me in that initial meeting that I had 6 months to live.
Wow.
So something we were obviously not prepared to receive at all. And I think it goes back to the question of how little information is actually known about ALS and how variable the actual progression can be, that we then went through six different specialists over the course of the next 4 months. They did a panoply of testing on me. And it wasn't until November of 2017 that someone actually looked at me and said, I think you have ALS. It wasn't until February of 2018 that a test actually confirmed that I have ALS. And so part of the difficulty that people face is, if they're not, and this is an odd word to use, but lucky like me, and actually get into a clinic very quickly, they can go years with misdiagnoses and never get the treatment that they need or never get the care that they need to actually deal with this thing. So we sat in that room after getting the final word, and you feel unmoored, but at the same time, you also start to think, and at least I started to think to myself, if this thing is coming, why be mad? Why be angry? There's going to be plenty of time where I can't do anything at all. Right now I can. So let's figure out a way to actually channel that positive feeling and make it real. Because at the time you think I'm going crazy when you start thinking that, but then you realize there are actually a lot of people out there that share that view, and that if you actually can tap into their energy, you can actually find a way to do something pretty darn cool.
One of the things also is that you both are 38 years old. You have two young children, 3 years old and 1 year old. And one of the things that you guys talked about after that diagnosis was, we need to get a new cell phone to have a lot more storage so you can make videos for your children. What are some of the things that you're doing now to make sure that they know you, Brian, and Sandra, and know what is happening here?
Well, we have a lot of dance parties. We're trying to, you know, just take time with the family, take vacations, be together. They're 1 and 3, so, you know, our one-year-old doesn't speak yet, so we're not having conversations about this. But we're also fortunate to have Brian pretty much in a place where he can do everything, so we're not having to explain anything at this point. But we're just trying to spend a lot of time together as a family.
In mentioning the videos, though, and things like that, are you doing those now?
I think our two iPhones are probably full at this point in time of videos and photos, and a lot of it is stuff that we should have been doing a long time ago. You know, we have been lucky in our life to have some amazing jobs and amazing opportunities, and often you don't pause to enjoy those moments. And so one of the odd sort of absurdities of a diagnosis like ALS is that you actually, at least I find myself, pausing to enjoy those moments a lot more than I did 3 years ago.
See, yeah. I'm like every other for lack of a better word, jerk out there who complains about there's too much traffic. Whatever you want to throw in there.
Oh, Brian complains about traffic. Oh.
Good. But there's also, I mean, there's got to be a cherishing too, and I, you know, fingers crossed. Nobody knows what the future is going to hold, and nobody. I don't know how long I'm going to be here. Eric doesn't. Yeah, the whole thing. So it's kind of crazy that we all live like that, and we don't really think about it at all. But so you're in that. I'm trying to like put myself in your shoes. I think that I would have gone at least through some period of thinking, why didn't I work out more? Why didn't I do this? I think I probably would have beaten myself up on choices that I made that were perfectly fine choices. I was living my life, but I would probably look in the mirror and think I could have done better. I mean, did you go through anything like that?
Oh yeah. I'd be lying if I didn't say that I did. You know, when we got the news in November, I think up until that point in time, we were hoping that there was something else. And then when we had the first doctor tell us, look, I've been doing this for X number of years. I'm pretty sure this is ALS. You know, we were, you know, flew home after that visit. And you have that moment where you think to yourself, like, what did I do wrong? Like, you know, how could I have not, you know, been in this situation? And realize, you know, quickly that is not, one, productive, two, factually accurate, and three, you know, there is no answer that's going to make me feel better right now. The best thing I could do is actually figure out how to fix the situation that I'm in, find a cure for this, and then actually live, you know, another 40 years and see our kids do every cool thing that I want to see them do.
It's beautiful. We got, do we have enough time we got to take here, Michael? Is that accurate? We can talk. Okay, so can you guys stick around through the news here? We'll have one more segment with you guys if that's okay. We really appreciate the time. IamALS.org is the website. And if you want to follow on Twitter to get more information, IamALSORG.
Welcome back to Nightside on 720 WGN. My name is Eric Rung. I am with Mark Carmen. And in studio is Brian Wallach and his wife, Sandra Apravaya. They are here talking about IMALS, a very important campaign to raise money for not only awareness, but research and to help find a cure for ALS. Brian, as we were talking in break here, we got a text that came in. This is from 773. It said, what happened to the money from the Ice Bucket Challenge? Didn't hear about any advances in medicine or anything like that. Talk to us a little bit about where, how that money was used and why your campaign is so important.
So I'll start not with the money, but with a couple other things that came out of Ice Bucket. Obviously, Ice Bucket was a global phenomenon that, you know, attracted millions and millions of eyes to ALS. It got the acronym out there. And that was a really important step because that brought in new scientists, that brought in new efforts to actually find a treatment and find a cure. And the money from Ice Bucket has been used to actually help push research across multiple different spectrums and really bring awareness to the effort that is ALS finding of a cure for ALS. The issue is that money was a one-time infusion. And so we are aiming to build a movement that will actually help accelerate funding year over year because it becomes really important to a researcher to actually know that they're going to have a 2, 3, 4 year runway because these things, as much as I wish they would happen overnight, take a long time to get from their initial cycles to actually getting to the point where they can be a viable drug to treat someone like myself. So to enable that, to make this real, to make it accelerated, we have to build a pipeline of funding that doesn't come once, but comes every single year and grows and grows and grows.
Two questions. One, I think some people might be wondering, well, what's going on with the current administration right now? Have they stripped funding? Have they added on? So I'm assuming you have knowledge of this, of what is going on right now politically.
So, you know, the overall funding for NIH, as most folks probably remember, has been a big hot button issue. What I, you know, can say is that the funding for ALS has inched up incrementally, whereas funding for other diseases that are similar has gone up significantly more. And so, you know, it's not a political thing. You know, I don't think you meet a Democrat or Republican or an independent or Green Party member is going to say, yay, ALS, it's great. But the problem is people just don't know that if they increase the funding to actual parity with the other diseases that are out there, we can find a way to cure this thing, because we're doing all this. We're making all these breakthroughs without the funding. So imagine if you actually gave us money, then we'd do some pretty cool stuff.
What's your day-to-day like right now? It's this far along. What challenges do you have? What's it like for you?
Their little things are what get harder. So like buttoning a shirt, you know, something that we all take for granted, that takes actual thought now. Walking down the street, want to make sure I don't wipe out on ice. I mean, you want to do that, you know, regardless of whether you pay us or not.
That's hard to do today.
Exactly. But, you know, the my gait, you know, changes a little bit. Speech changes a little bit. You have to be more aware of kind of who you are and what you're doing. Whereas, you know, as a 35-year-old guy, I never thought about that stuff at all.
And Sandra, talk to us a little bit about how your life has changed. As you said, we are in this.
Yeah. I mean, we started IMALS in part because we were stunned by how much of the Wild West it felt like it was of a disease space. I didn't know anything about it until our diagnosis. And first of all, I was like floored, stunned when we found out what the prognosis was, and just the fact that there weren't enough drugs in clinical trials, and it was hard to find out which clinical trials we should become a part of, and it just took like a lot of homework. So I think for us, the biggest change at first was we were totally immersed in reading data of clinical trials and trying to navigate our way. And it felt nuts that this was totally on us as patients. Even though we had great doctors, these weren't FDA-approved drugs. So ethically, a doctor's not in a position to tell you to try something that's not FDA-approved. So you as a patient have to do a lot of navigating. And part of what IMALS intends to do is make that navigation easier for patients. And so that's another real way in which we want to support the patient community and then bring them into this fight. But it has been an overwhelming process of finding our way, just even on the medical side alone.
Yeah, one of my good friends, a mentor who I look up to, I mean, she was diagnosed with cancer, was given, I don't know, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it was, and she had to do exactly what you're saying, find her way, go against Western medicine, flying, you know, just doing research, being your own advocate with doctors. Yes, I'll do that. No, I won't do this. I want to try that. You know, all, I mean, all of it, because they don't know. As hard as the doctors work and as educated as they are, smart as they are, all that, there's no exact playbook. So, I mean, it's just I just see what you're dealing with as far as, you know, figuring out your own way. I mean, but that's scary, right? To say, no, I disagree with you. I mean, have you actually like found that voice where you are willing to say no to doctors? I will do this. I won't do that.
I mean, you know, we see a few different doctors and we get a few different opinions, and then we think about it as a family and then we make a decision.
Yeah.
It was also a big change in our life because Brian received this first, not diagnosis, but statement from this neurologist that I think you have ALS, which means you might have 6 months to live, the day we got home from the hospital with our second baby. So, yes, our whole world is upended. And
I go ahead, Brian.
I mean, to answer your question, you know, we have found that voice. And I think, as you described from your mentor, it's important that patients find that voice, because, you know, this is about two things. Obviously, at the end of the day, you're fighting for your life, but you have to find treatments that will help you, and you also have to find people that can help you along the way, because this disease changes everything that you experience. And so part of what we want to do is shine a light on the amazing groups that are out there fighting for this disease that no one ever knows about, that you can't find unless you actually have a team of researchers at your disposal.
Yeah. And no one, by the way, signs up for this, as we all know. And here you are, you know, on WGN Radio, in the Chicago Tribune, trying to, I mean, just the vulnerability to go out and do this. Okay, we're going to be out and about. Whereas I'm sure, like, you know, I'm curious, like, what you would tell people who, you know, friends who like don't know how to be around, like they're afraid to be around Brian now or whatever, and like so there's that, and now I mean you're putting it out to the entire world. Like, was there a conversation like, okay, we're gonna do this and we're gonna become the face of raising money for the cure? I mean, it's a huge decision, huge vulnerability. You're both looking at each other right now, wondering who's gonna talk. It's for me.
I'll just say I think our whole life experience is we know how to act. We know that when we do things and we put our energy into things that seem like barriers you cannot conquer, we feel better when we whack at them, when we try to jump over them, when we link arms with our friends to conquer them. And we have some inspiring experiences from having done some good work on presidential campaigns and having defeated odds in the past and have remarkable people in our network. And if you know, we are active and trying and working at it, it does empower us.
And just kind of to go from what Mark was saying there, too, I think a lot of people, you know, when you would get a diagnosis like this would think, all right, what do I need to do right now to make sure that I'm getting everything that I need right now for me and my family? And yet you guys have decided that part of that is going to be raising money to help others, which is incredible, I think.
Well, thank you for that. But, you know, there's a part of this that, as Sandra said, is really empowering for us going through this together and with our friends and family, because you lose control of so much when you fight a disease like this. Being able to go out there and meet other people that are of the same mindset, being able to go out there and build something that you hope can help others, gives you that sense of purpose, gives you that sort of sense of fortitude that ALS can strip of you so easily. And so you have to embrace the unknown. You have to believe that what you're doing right now, while I hope, yes, it will help me, if it doesn't, it's going to help someone else, that is a valuable end in and of itself. And so, you know, do I want to be here as an old man coming back on your show? Absolutely. But in the interim, you know, if we can do everything possible to make sure that another family doesn't have to sit in this seat 10 years from now, that's a pretty good thing as well.
Website again, IAMALS.org, and you can follow along on Twitter, IAMALSORG. So what's next here, team? Where are we? What are the next moves that are, I guess, are right in front of you as far as getting the word out and you know, living your days?
So with IMALS, you know, the next thing is to start getting out to the community, start hearing from them, start showing in the world the faces of ALS, who we are, and that we're out there in every facet of your lives, and getting people engaged, really taking people through that ladder of engagement that we saw back in 2008, where you can actually build communities that never existed before. So we're going to do that, and at the same time, keep date night, keep movie night, and keep the dance parties going.
And what would you say to people out there who maybe are nervous to approach a loved one who has ALS or any disease like that, where you know, it's like, I don't know how to be. Can I ask him how he's feeling? I mean, what sitting in the chair, like, what do you want from the people around you?
So we're going through changes. That part is undeniable. But fundamentally, you know, I am the same person I was the day before I was diagnosed, and I am the same person I will be tomorrow. So treat me the same way. You know, we are your friends. We are your sisters, your brothers. We love you the same way we did before. We're going to fight with you the same way we did before. So that is what I think I would ask of folks is, you know, let's live life. Let's enjoy these moments. Let's not make it something where we look back on this at the end and say, if only we'd been there for each other in that way at that time.
You're awesome, Brian.
Thank you,
Sandra.
Thank you guys so much for coming in. One more time, give that website.
IAMALS.org, and the Twitter is IAMALSORG. Is there anything else that we need out there as far as promotion? And you know, whatever you all need, I would love to help you along the way of your journey here, and prayers up and smile on the face. Let's and thank you so much for sharing tonight.
Thank you guys for having us on.
It was most definitely our pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Thank you guys.
Quick timeout, 720 WGN.